Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
You're listening to the LA Football Podcast. Hey, what's going on, Los Angeles? Welcome to the LA Football Show here on the LA Football Network. We are live on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. I'm your co-host, Ryan Dyer, joined as always by the madman, Jamal Madney. It's a Friday, a football Friday here. We're starting with our Rams, doing Rams talk for the next 20 to 40 minutes or so. Excited to get a little deeper into the draft as we rapidly rolled through it last episode. We'll talk some undrafted free agents. Plus, we want to go big picture and look at what the rest of the division did and how this remodel really looks comparatively now post-draft heading into OTAs and minicamp. But Madman, what's up, brother? Happy Friday. How are we doing?
Happy Friday, Rye. Excited to get into it with you as always with regards to the draft. It's a catch-your-breath Friday, it seems like. This time last week, things were fast and furious and frantic with pick after pick. And, you know, just what an incredible event it was last week, the NFL draft, how much it's grown. So nice to be at the end of the week. Nice to catch our breath here, relax a little bit. A happy Cinco de Mayo to everyone out there as well. Significant day today, of course. And what a great, perfect gateway into the weekend.
Yes, happy Cinco de Mayo and one of the best American holidays there is. It's not even American, but hey, it's a lot of fun for everyone. The draft was fantastic. 14 picks by your Rams, 26 added undrafted free agents. So a whole new team essentially added in a span of 3 days, which we'll dive into here in just a moment. Show, as always, brought to you by our friends at BetOnline. Head to betonline.ag today. Use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, gets you a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. NBA playoffs. Lakers are up right now in the series, or at least at the time of this recording, are up 1-0 on the Warriors. So you can head to BetOnline, throw some money down on them, hopefully win some as the Lakers are looking good. Let me ask you this, because I feel like whenever we do the BetOnline ad, we end up talking, you know, 30 seconds or so of basketball, which we never do. But did you think 2 months ago the Lakers would be in this position? Three games away from the Western Conference Finals.
Not at all. And I think that Rob Pelinka deserves a ton of credit for as maligned as he's been over the years. And obviously so much has come out about him the last couple of years, his relationship with Magic, his just overall competence and character as a GM and president of basketball operations. But for him to be able to make those two trades where he essentially traded D'Angelo Russell for Russell Westbrook and then got Vanderbilt, got Malik Beasley, and then that trade for Roy Hachimura for 2 second round picks. Those two picks are just phenomenally successful right now. And it was so late in the year that he only finished 11th in executive of the year. But if you sort of scale it out, that was an executive of the year type of move there. And so shout out to Rob Pelinka for what he's been able to do. And I'll be honest with you, Ryan, I think the Lakers are in preeminent position to win the title this year. I think there's one guy that can stop the Lakers from winning the title this year, and it's my namesake, and the guy plays on your favorite basketball team, and it's Jamal Murray of the Denver Nuggets. If Jamal Murray of the Denver Nuggets is bubble Jamal Murray, then I think that is the requisite help that the great Nikola Jokic needs to actually have Denver win it all. But if Murray has been the Murray the last couple of years, fighting injury, inconsistency, and just overall sporadic play, Lakers are winning it all. After 10 minutes into game one, I saw that matchup and I had so many Warriors fans on thread and I was like, Lakers are winning this series in six. I mean, they're just bigger. They're deeper. 10 minutes in, you could tell. It didn't even matter to me what the score was. The Warriors look old. They look tired and they look limited in terms of talent for the first time in the better part of a decade. Incredible run, one of the great dynasties of all time, but the dynasty's closing for the Warriors here in the next 10 days.
Yeah, it's crazy that the Lakers, I mean, everyone wanted everyone fired 2 months ago. And you know, that's why you gotta let it play out. And it was seemingly going to be, you know, LeBron was going to leave, which he still might wherever his son gets drafted. But LeBron was going to be leaving in a year or two, and it was going to be a full rebuild. And maybe it will be in 2 years. But it's crazy that now this team might be one of the favorites to win the whole thing. So I hope my Nuggets have something to say about it. But we'll see. It should be fun either way.
It's going to be really fun, Ryan, if it's Nuggets-Lakers Western Conference Finals, bringing shades back of 2009 Western Conference Finals with Kobe and Carmelo. And it's a special time, I think, to be a Laker fan. You know, it's so interesting that the Lakers haven't really felt like the Lakers since Kobe's passing and Kobe's retirement. And even the bubble title, you know, the true Laker fans don't really count that. There was no crowd. There was no parade. There just hasn't been an opportunity to be connected to this franchise for the better part of a decade now, depending on how far you want to go back. And I've had friends, you know, from college, high school, message me the last couple of days and be like, you know, it feels like the Lakers are the Lakers again. And I think it started in that game 3 against Memphis. And you start seeing the stars come out again, you know, Prince Harry and Megan and Kim Kardashian and Will Ferrell and Adam Sandler and Jack is back. I mean, how great a greater sign is than that? Dr. Dre, Denzel. It's starting to feel like the Lakers again. And this is a special city when the Lakers are rolling.
Yeah, no, it really is. And, you know, we love that our football teams are growing in the Rams and Chargers. We love that USC is like bringing back their dominance in the culture scene. UCLA is really on the up and up in terms of football. But, you know, this is still a Lakers town at the end of the day. And it hasn't felt like one for quite some time because they haven't been that good. And so if they're back, you can feel it through the streets. And that is for sure. So all that being said, make sure to go to betonline.ag and place your bet on the Lakers. Promo code BELIEVE. Tell them the guys at the LA Football Network sent you. All right, Jamal. So our Rammies, the Rams house, the Ramley, concluded their draft. We rattled through it very quickly on our live Monday night 30-minute stream at 6 p.m. Make sure, Rams fans, you tune in every Monday night, 6 p.m. for Rams Talk. And so we went through the picks real quick, gave our quick instant analysis. Quickly, before we go big picture and then look at the best, let's take a quick look at the undrafted free agent list. We won't take a ton of time just because we could take a lot of time because there's so many names, but I think there's a lot more important things we could talk about in terms of the brevity of like where the team actually sits. But is there, you know, we were going through this list before, obviously looked at it when it first came out, you know, two kickers on the list, Jamal, obviously they needed a kicker. So one of these kickers seemingly will be the next kicker for the Rams starting in 2023. You've got some receivers on here, one quarterback added out of the great University of Tennessee, Martin. They did just add Brett Rippon as well today as a free agent out of, he was with the Denver Broncos, and now he will be battling for that backup spot as well, or QB3 spot. So don't even have to give me names just because these, a lot of these are small school guys, you know, got a couple bigger guys, Grant Miller out of Baylor and whatnot. But when you look at these positions, Jamal, like where do you see the best value in terms of guys that play these positions that have a real shot, not only to make this team, but to probably have a fairly viable impact just because of how many holes are on this roster before these guys were added?
You know, Ryan, it's interesting that you mentioned this. When I look at the list of 26 players, and you sort of do an aggregation, you know, there's sort of three themes that I think emerge for me in terms of what are the common threads across these 26 players and what are the Rams really trying to do. I think the first theme is that there's a fair amount of smaller school guys, and it's less heralded guys, smaller markets, smaller schools. Very interesting guys that have flown under the radar. And I think as a result of that, are going to be cheap, they're going to be hungry, and they're going to be in a position where they have a lot to prove. I think the second theme is those guys having been under the radar. If you look at any one of their college statistics, you're going to see a lot of productivity on the field. These aren't guys that, you know, you're drafting based on or signing based on potential. You're not signing based on measurables in a combine situation. You're not drafting in terms of, well, given skill set A, C, and E, given this situation, it's going to work. You're signing guys who have been productive at the collegiate level. Now, that collegiate level could be FBS, FCS, and down the list, but guys that genuinely have great output being on the field. And at the end of the day, that is the greatest measure of success translating to the next level. And then I think the third piece, Ryan, is they're going to be hungry. And I think they're all hungry to sort of make the team. They see an opportunity where they can be a big part of a team that was just 2 years removed from winning the Super Bowl. And I think to answer your question in particular, I think the guys on the defensive side of the ball have a real opportunity to make this team. Just given where this roster is defensively, outside of Aaron Donald, I think everything and anything is sort of open for discussion around who's going to play, where are they going to play, how are they going to play. And so I think that level of flexibility and openness really opens the door. Because if you look at the offensive side of the ball, you know you have Stafford. You know you have a Cup, Van Jefferson type of hierarchy at receiver. You know you've got a combination of Akers and Kyren Williams at running back. You know there's some things that are going on at tight end with Higbee and Benny Scrow and now Allen out of Clemson. There are some hierarchies that are established from a depth position on the offensive side of the ball. The line still needs work, but the defense, you just don't have that same sense of clarity of who's one, who's two, who's three at a number of different positions. So these guys that are particularly on the defensive side of the ball, to me, should be salivating at an opportunity not only to make a roster, but make a big impact as a rookie. And for some of these guys from these smaller schools, I mean, what an incredible story that would be year over year to be flying under the radar in college and potentially even in FCS. And now you're taking on a significant role for a team that won the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, 13 of these 26, so right in the middle, defensive players, I believe three special teamers and being two kickers and a long snapper and the rest offensemen. So real split, or at least a lot of diversity at each of the picks. But a lot, when you look at the defensive side, you essentially have, you know, couple backers and the rest are all secondary guys, which is clearly what was needed in terms of, you know, you lose Jalen Ramsey, you lose two safeties in Taylor Rapp and Nick Scott. And so there, and then the rest is a lot of youth, which this is just adding more youth, but it just means opportunity. And every single year on almost every team across this league, all 32 teams, seemingly one undrafted free agent almost always makes the roster. And the Rams could end up having four or five maybe make the roster just because of all the room that's there. And granted, they did have 14 draft picks, but I mean, in the end of the day, all 36 or 38, whatever, my math is bad, players are on an even playing field, whether you're drafted or undrafted. I mean, they're all incoming rookies making a name for themselves. So outside of maybe a Steve Avila that, you know, has a really high pedigree and was their first pick in the second round, all bets are off for the rest. And so it's going to be really fun to see where these guys, you know, if one of the receivers can maybe break through, like if they can push some of these other, like a Benny Scrow or a Tutu, to the limits and either make them better or take over. You know, if these corners can push a Robert Rochelle or a Kendrick or these other guys that got some starts last year and some playing time, if they can push those or supersede them. And then you look at some of the running backs and what's going to happen with, you know, Cam Akers next year. Is he going to be re-signed or is he done? And obviously drafted Kyren Williams last year, drafted Evans this year, which there's a lot of excitement about, but you add, you know, a running back as well in Tyon Evans out of Louisville, who I think has a lot of burst and there's some excitement around him. So, and running backs is one of the positions that is almost the easiest to make the roster as an undrafted guy, because if you got tread in your tire and you got good tenacity and you'll play special teams, there's a spot for you. So, a lot of excitement around this undrafted list, Jamal. A lot of unknown, as you mentioned, a lot of smaller school guys. And so, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I've watched tape on all 26 of these guys, but I think there's a lot of really fun opportunity here for these guys. And these next, you know, OTAs and mini camps and the training camp is a lot of fun to watch. And there's always that guy that kind of stands out and everyone starts taking notice and Twitter goes wild over. And so let's just do this. let's take a shot in the dark for fun. There's really no reasoning behind this to our listeners out there. But I want you, Jamal, to just pick a name. You could even just close your eyes and point if you want. But give me a guy on this list that you're like, that's a guy. It can't be a kicker because obviously one of these kickers is going to be most likely the Rams kicker. So outside of kicker, one of these names is going to make a name for themselves in training camp.
Oh, I'm putting man, you on the spot. You're putting me on the spot here, right? I mean, this is sort of interesting for me. What does my heart say? What do the instincts say here?
That's it.
What my heart? There's something about this kid, Cameron McCutcheon, the corner from Western Carolina. I just think that, you know, from the little I've seen of him in terms of tape and just the tenacity and, you know, just some of the games that he's played, I have a feeling he's going to really make a name for himself, especially given the need at that position. I also like Quindell Johnson, the safety out of Memphis. I think both those guys are kind of cut from the same cloth. Both secondary guys, hard hitters, physical guys, a lot of attitude, chip on their shoulder, feel like they should have been drafted. So I have a feeling they're going to make a lot of noise there. And I think the other one player, if I, you know, could really sort of stand out and say, hey, who do I really like here, is DeAndre Square, the linebacker out of Kentucky, because he played in some big games. And, you know, especially that game, couple of games against Georgia the last 2 years. And obviously Kentucky got their hats handed to them there. But, you know, he really sort of made a name for himself in some of those games. So those are kind of the three guys that I would say, you know, kind of the heart is kind of just telling me, watch out there.
I like it. Yeah. Hey, why not? We'll roll this tape back and see if any of these hit here in 2 months or so. I'll go one offense, one defense. Starting with defense, I'm going to go with Colin Duncan, strong safety out of Mississippi State. Again, not a ton of reasoning behind this. He's 6 foot, 200 pounds. So a nice big body like the Rams tend to like on the back end there. I know they drafted a little differently, you know, with the Jim Thorpe Award winner, who's a smaller guy. But when you have a Jim Thorpe Award winner fall in the sixth round, you don't care about size. But Duncan kind of fits that size profile, similar in size to like a Jordan Fuller, who's their starter. Played in the SEC. He's a senior, so obviously has quite a bit of production in college and some history and tape, a lot of tape on himself. So Colin Duncan, we'll see. And then, hey, we need another starting safety, right? Who's to say it can't be an undrafted guy out of the SEC? On offense, phenomenal name. Some good production in the Mountain West. I'm going with Braxton Burmeister out of San Diego State, mainly just because of the name. Of
course, you love San Diego State. That's your squad. You know, if Long Beach State was not, you know, the alma mater, I have a feeling San Diego State would have been.
I actually I don't like San Diego State at all.
Oh my God! And why is that? Is it because of a rivalry?
I think it's because there's a little like unspoken rivalry with Long Beach State. So that's what. So if you're asking my 17-year-old self if I could go anywhere to school, then yes, San Diego State was definitely probably on that list, because who wouldn't want to go to San Diego State? But now post graduation, 15 years removed, whatever, I'm getting old. Long Beach State, go Beach grad. Yeah, no. All the schools like San Diego State, UC Santa Barbara, all those, like I don't like all those schools because those were it wasn't even like athletically rivals, because obviously UC Santa Barbara was a little bit athletically. We're in the same conference, but it was more so like UC Santa Barbara was like the rich party school, Isla Vista on the beach. San Diego State was another party school, and Long Beach State was known as a commuter school. But it's like, we had fun. We knew how to have fun and have parties, and everyone just looked down at us as this little commuter school. And it's like, no,
And that's so interesting, because all three schools, the proximity to the beach is actually, or to a body of water, is actually, you know, just about the same. And yet that's so interesting that UC Santa Barbara, I hadn't thought of that. And San Diego State are sort of thought of as these fun, gregarious party schools.
They look down on us. They look down on us. And we'd always say, you know, we're the blue collar party school, that we pay our own way. We don't have daddy and mommy paying for our drinks. We pay for our own drinks. And two, we're the only institution in America with, and by institution, I mean university, with beach in our actual name. So you may be by the beach like us, but we actually have beach in our name.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. I love that. That's amazing.
So there's my Long Beach State badge. So, but there anyway, it is. I can still cheer for Braxton Burmeister.
I mean, it seems like you share a common element here, you know, with the Rams undrafted free agents, and that is the chip on the shoulder and ready to prove it. I mean, I love it. Oh my goodness.
Always a chip. You know, I was
That was the takeaway, because I would think like the rich party school, beach school vibe to me feels almost like a Pepperdine, right? I mean, or, you know, something like that, you know, even maybe like a Miami on the other side as well. But I mean, obviously we're keeping it to California, but yeah, it's interesting how these schools get there.
Well,
get there.
Pepperdine definitely has the rich, but I wouldn't even put, I feel like, they, I mean, I'm sure they do, but they're not like a party school. So I think they were just seen
Pepperdine's
as like,
not a party school.
Rich.
Pepperdine is such a party school. You know, that's I feel like we got to get some audience engagement here on which is the greatest party. That's actually a really good question. What is the greatest party school in Southern California? University. Greatest party university in Southern California.
Where's our, and we got to go to break here. Where's our borders? Is it from like slow, like San Luis Obispo to San Diego?
Yes. San Luis Obispo down to San Diego. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to get a poll up because now I'm really curious, but we got to take a quick break on radio. We'll continue this conversation plus actual Rams talk here at the bottom of our hour. This is the LA Football Show. Be right back. All right, welcome back, Los Angeles, to the LA Football Show. Here on the LA Football Network, we are live on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. We're talking Rams, talking undrafted free agents. We're going big picture. But first, we got to settle. We're talking party schools. Got off on a little tangent here thanks to Braxton Burmeister out of San Diego State, new receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, undrafted free agent. And before we wrap this up, know anyone that really went there, but I never pegged Pepperdine as a good party school. For me, it was always, before I throw back to you, for me, it was, obviously I'm biased. I went to Long Beach State. I don't think it's known by any means as a party school. So when we put this poll up, I don't think anyone will vote for Long Beach State, but I had a good time. But for me, it was always UC Santa Barbara, San Diego State, and then you had UCLA and USC because of they're just the bigger schools, and they have obviously the Greek life there. So, I mean, those were the four in that area that were it for me. I never had Pepperdine in there.
Love that. No, I Pepperdine's way up there. I mean, and to me, because it's located in Malibu.
It's beautiful.
You know, it's gorgeous. There's some wealth there for sure. And I think that, you know, Pepperdine always felt like that school that if you didn't get into USC because you partied too hard, you went to Pepperdine. And so I feel like Pepperdine has got to be there. Obviously, USC with the Greek life is up there for sure. But I think what's interesting is SC is a great party school for the Greek life, but it's not like, you know, there's a lot of beach life at USC, given that it's so urban. And so I think I got to go, you know, Pepperdine's got to be on that list. Obviously, SC, love San Diego State, love Long Beach State, love UC Santa Barbara. I think University of San Diego, USD, has got to be out there as well. Shout out to USD.
I went to some parties there.
There's a lot going on there for sure.
Here's a, just to cut in, so I had a friend that went to USD, and so this was always fun when we go to party down there, another very wealthy school, well-off school. Yeah. So they all, you know, the USD is a beautiful small campus up on the bluffs, but everyone, when they live off campus, and you might know this, but they all live like on Mission Beach, all the streets there like are on like perpendicular to the ocean, and it's like Santa Barbara Street, whatever, it's all these like city names. These are all 18, 19-year-old kids living in beach homes on the beach. And so all the parties are on the beach. So we would go down there like, you know, once every other month to see my friend. Like, sweet, we're just going to party on the beach. This is great.
I'm telling you, man, I think USD is the winner. I got to be honest with you. From some of the friends that I have and some of the experiences there, because the Greek life at USC is sort of legendary more because of name and because of like the network. But the party, like the 9-0, you know, I mean, I went to the 9-0 a ton as an undergrad. Like the 9-0 is kind of a dump, okay? You know, like, I mean, God bless, but it's, you know, the sticky floors and, you know, all of that stuff. It's not exactly a fun place to party. You're there because of the vibe and the people and all of that. And even Fraternity Row of USC, it's not the nicest place. You're there for the mystique. So yeah. I don't know if like the enjoyment of party is quite the same. Obviously the name is so huge, but I think the challenge with Pepperdine is Malibu itself is not really a college town, right? I mean, it's all super boutique-y, super spread out, super wealthy. It's not the most accessible place to have great parties. It's unbelievable scenery, and Pepperdine definitely has their party scene, but now we're like comparing, you know, alphas to alphas here in terms of party school. I think USD has it all. I think it's got like the location. I think the proximity to like main San Diego and what a great city that is. Obviously the student body, level of attractiveness, and just that whole kind of geography, look, accessibility. I'm going USD.
Yeah. So funny. I don't even know if I'm allowed. Well, I'm not saying anything bad, but so we were at USD one time and my friend that went there was from high school. She was a girl. So when we stayed over, we stayed in like the common room. And so we were out. This was when she was still in the dorms before she moved to Mission Beach, which still was mind-blowing. I'm like, you live on the beach as a 19-year-old. But anyway, different story. So we are out on Mission Beach at other houses, come back to the dorms. And in their common room, of course, it was a 10 times nicer common room than I had at Long Beach State. They had like a gaming system, like big screen TV. So I had like an N64. And my buddy, when we all went to bed, I won't say his name. So if he listens to this, he'll get a kick. But he woke up and threw up on the N64 and the TV. And basically And so we had to get out of Dodge pretty quickly the next morning.
Wow.
Weren't really welcome back to the campus.
Long Beach State guys to ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah. You know, do we have to do so? Okay. Then we're moving back to Rams. So last calls I got to throw out here. And this is a wild card. Have you ever heard of Claremont McKenna?
Oh, of course I have. Absolutely. Yeah.
So Claremont McKenna, small school. It's almost
great
like
great school, by the way. Three, shout out to one of the Claremont colleges. I mean, the Claremont schools are amazing institutions.
Oh yeah. And it's like what on that campus in Claremont, it's like two or three colleges in one almost. It's kind of, but it might not be anymore. This was, you know, 15 years ago when I was in college, was a wet campus, which was so bizarre to me going out there and being on campus underage. And there was no issue drinking on campus. It was the weirdest thing to me to be able to just like chugging Jaeger in the gymnasium of Claremont McKenna. So throw out a little wild card there.
No, that's Claremont such McKenna. A good call. Claremont McKenna is like the Rams undrafted free agent that's going to end up becoming a star in terms of this analogy.
How we because tie it all back in.
You tie it all back in. Absolutely. Look, the biggest partier in business school when I was at Stanford. And now, granted, I mean, it's Stanford. It's a kind of a serious school. So, like, when you say the biggest partier at Stanford, like, yes, I understand there's asterisks left and right. But the biggest partier at Stanford for me when I was in business school was a guy from Claremont McKenna. I'm not going to say his name, but he was so much fun. Still is. Lives out in the Bay Area right now. And you could tell he was seasoned after, you know, 10, 15 years where he learned the true meaning of partying at Claremont McKenna. And that's a beautiful area too. And, you know, when you combine it with like Pomona College and Pitzer and Harvey Mudd, and there's a really cool vibe there of just like all of these schools kind of sharing space and what have you. So you get a really eclectic mix. I love that. That's a huge one.
Yeah, there you go. So Claremont McKenna. So we'll get a little pull up for fun, see if people
I think we got to do a little March Madness action. You know, we seed them and then we see what happens.
Here we go. Okay. So yeah, head to LAFBnetwork.com. We'll have it up there.
We're more than just football. We're a lifestyle brand. We're going to, you know, get you everything that you need to be successful, both on and off the field.
The LAFB lifestyle. That's what we do here. All right. So pivoting back to the Rams, which we did incorporate them there here and there. Let's look big picture now, Jamal. So we have these undrafted free agents. We have the 14 draft picks. That overall, I think, we both gave the Rams what, an A and an A minus on their draft? Does that sound right?
I gave them a B.
Maybe you gave them a B and I gave them an A minus or a B plus. Now I'm blending the Rams and Chargers together.
I think you gave them a B plus, I gave them a B.
Okay. I'm blending them together. So overall, for not having a first round pick, you know, they're able to get 14 total picks out of the roster. Overall, good draft. When you look at the Niners, who are still probably the favorite in the division at this time, even though the quarterback position obviously has a lot of question marks. You look at the Seahawks, who are still, we're a playoff team, and this is what we're going to talk about, but I think they had a very good draft. And you look at the Cardinals, who might be seen as even worse than the Rams, considering what the Rams roster is, but just because there's a lot of unknown there, brand new head coach for the first time. They traded back from their top pick. They did get some draft picks, but do they reach on an offensive lineman, all that stuff. So let's start with whatever team you want. I'll throw it to you. Big picture, how do you think the rest of the NFC West, did, and what does that mean for this remodel for the Rams?
Ryan, I think the team that got an A+ in terms of drafting were the Hawks. I mean, they were just unbelievable. They were outstanding. They got everybody they wanted and everybody that they needed. And I think that they, depending on what the quarterback situation is in San Francisco and still the uncertainty there, I think if you ask today, you know, in May of 2023, early May of 2023, I think the Seahawks are now the favorites in the NFC West, given how well they played. And I think that's predicated on Geno Smith picking up where he left off, let's call it the first three quarters or the first half of last season, and sort of playing that out for a whole season. Now, whether he can do that remains to be seen. But when you look at a Smith Najigba with a DK Metcalf, and then you bring on our guy Zach Charbonnet, and you pair him with a Kenneth Walker, and then just on and on the list you go, whether it was Witherspoon, and then even undrafted, right? I mean, the fact that they got Jake Bobo, the highest rated receiver in the Pac-12, mm-hmm. according to PFF, goes undrafted, and he goes undrafted to the Hawks. I mean, just absolutely incredible what they were able to do. I think they're the favorites right now. The Niners went in as the favorites. They didn't need to do as much. I think they made some decent picks. I think the Niners, obviously Jake Moody aside, as you know, as a kicker in the third round, which you got to knock them down a couple of notches there just in terms of judgment. They were probably at about a B- in the draft. And so I think overall, you sort of look at this division, I think the Cardinals did not make enough movement to really warrant contender status. I think so much of this now depends on Trey Lance and Geno Smith and how they do. But I think the Hawks are probably the favorites in this division. I think the Niners are second, Rams are third, Cardinals are fourth. But I think the gap between 1 through 3, I think is pretty narrow and is very, very predicated on quarterback play. And that can move around in a number of different ways. So for me, I think the Rams 8-9, 9-8, I think is about right. And with an opportunity to get into the playoffs, and if these young guys can gel and Donald and Kupp and Stafford can stay healthy, can they eke into the playoffs, get hot at the right time, and potentially make a bit of a run? But I think that's where this thing nets out. You and I have sort of talked about between 7 and 10 wins. 7 feels a little low, 10 feels a little high. I think they're going to be kind of an 8-9, 9-8 team.
Yeah, you know, the Seahawks definitely had a fantastic draft. And you see sometimes teams, you know, they were drafting with purpose, right? Like it made every Absolutely. Pick that they were like made sense. Like, oh, that's a great fit. Like it makes sense to pair it with. Oh, that makes sense. Like maybe we don't like the player going there because it might hurt their stock, but overall it makes them as a team better, speaking specifically of Zach Charbonnet. And so they definitely had a draft with purpose. For them, as you alluded to, it's really all going to come down to Geno Smith. Yeah. We've seen time and time again, really good rosters that if the QB can absolutely elevate, can keep them decent or can sabotage them.
Yep.
And if Geno Smith plays like last year, then yes, I think they're the favorite. I mean, he was very solid last year, had moments of greatness, had moments of old Geno Smith, but overall was a good NFL starting quarterback last year. But you look at other teams throughout history and teams that have had very good rosters and maybe go all in on a quarterback that was not the right decision, and the season ends in absolute peril. One I can think of, just because being a fan of them for many years, you look at the Broncos when they brought in Case Keenum. You know, they had a very solid roster from top to bottom. And Case Keenum, unfortunately, they had some coaching issues as well, which the Seahawks don't have, you know, having the seasoned Pete Carroll there. So that certainly helps. But, you know, the quarterback play of Case Keenum kind of sabotaged that season and they immediately went a different direction. So if Geno Smith falls back to old Geno Smith, then this could still end up being a 6-7 win team. And they're basically just deciding to draft a quarterback next year and moving on from 2 years and a lot of money remaining on Geno Smith's contract. But if he plays like he did last year, then yeah, I agree. Because of this draft, they're even better than the playoff team they were last year. And they're going to be a tough beat, especially at home, which is, you know, one of the most difficult places to play up there in Seattle. San Francisco, you know, very good roster. So they're, if we're looking purely at this, their draft, I think it was a pretty, not a great draft. I mean, they had a lot of draft picks due to compensatory picks. We can make fun of the Jake Moody pick, which we will, and we should. But overall, I just think it was a meh draft for them, but their roster is very loaded outside of quarterback. So it's, if we want to look at them as a team, I think they're fine still. They're still probably one of the favorites, depending on quarterback play. If we want to strictly look at the draft, they, I think, had probably the worst draft in the whole division. We're looking purely at draft picks taken at the end of April. You know, it's funny. We were talking about kickers being drafted, and I was like thinking, and it's like, okay, how many actual starting kickers in the NFL today on all 32 teams, not including Jake Moody, so 31 teams, were actually drafted, trying to see, like, is it actually worth taking a kicker, or is it just to go the undrafted free agent route? And only 13 total kickers, and of those 13, only 6 are still on their original team, were drafted. The rest were all undrafted. So very funny that the Niners decided to use a third round pick on a kicker that, I don't want to say this harshly, but I wouldn't even call like a phenomenal generational kicker in Jake Moody. I mean, it's like they're getting a, you know, Robert Aguayo obviously didn't work out, drafted out of Florida State, but he was a generational kicker coming out of college, like literally did not miss in college. So it was like, okay, that's, they drafted high, but it made sense getting a, some of these other guys, Seabass, we talked about in the last show. So you use a pick, high pick on a kicker that wasn't even generational. And you look at the history of, hey, only 6 drafted kickers are still on the original team. The rest are either moved out of the league or are undrafted. Makes you scratch your head at that. So, and the Cardinals, I think, had a fine draft. You know, they moved back from early, moved back to 6. They get a tackle in what, Paris Johnson, at Ohio State, maybe a little high. I love their Ojulari pick in the second round. I love the John Gain picks. Obviously we love, you know, UCLA guy here. But overall, there's just their team instill is just so much around what is Kyler Murray going to do? And what will the new head coaching staff do? Because anytime you have a brand new head coach, first time head coach, there's going to be some growing pains. And he's obviously a defensive mind. So there's the offensive coordinator there. There's going to be question marks and how they gel with Kyler and how he's coming back. And DeAndre Hopkins, is he happy? I know they said they're now committed to him, but they shopped him around a lot, like how that's going to look. So they're still, to me, the bottom of the division, even after this draft. So I think if we're being honest, I think the remodel for the Rams, Jamal, is kind of where it was even before the draft. I think that the Seahawks elevated themselves higher than what we expected. And outside of that, everything is still kind of status quo as it was even 2 months ago.
Yeah, Ryan, I think it sort of reconfirms that this was the ideal year to do the remodel, because at the end of the day, we're still talking about the two teams that could head and shoulders be above the Rams this year is depending on some very unique circumstances. Mm-hmm. Look, I think Brock Purdy was an answer to the Niners. I just don't know, when you're talking about elbow of throwing arm and the seriousness of that, you know, does Brock Purdy ever really come back? I mean, to that level, it's a question. And I think it's a viable question to ask right now. And so the Niners are putting their faith in Trey Lance, a guy who hasn't really played competitive football in 3 years. You're asking a guy who hasn't really played football in 3 years to lead a team to win a division title after not having done that. That seems to be just such a tall ask and such a tall order, regardless of how stacked the rest of your roster is, because the most important position on the field by an order of magnitude, you are asking so much from. And then second, with the Hawks, again, they have all these playmakers. They're doing really well. But now you're asking a guy who didn't really have a very good season as a professional throughout his career that spanned over a decade, mm-hmm. to then have two consecutive really good seasons, to have two consecutive Pro Bowl seasons for you to be a viable contender. So think about that. You're asking Trey Lance, who hasn't played football in 3 years to be great, or you're asking Geno Smith, who hasn't been great for 10 years, was for half of last season, to now repeat that performance and do it for the whole season. Both of those feel like really tall asks. And I don't see both of those things happening. Maybe one happens, and maybe one happens for a little bit. So when you sort of look at it in the grand scheme of things, this was the year to do this remodel for the Rams, because even the top of this division, they are, it's such a reach right now. And so, you know, this isn't like you got Kansas City in your division, or this isn't, you have Cincinnati in your division or Buffalo in your division. This is still a very open division right now. So why not rebuild on the fly, get these young guys in a room together, make the team, whoever's hungriest, whoever is most active is going to sort of separate themselves, and you got your three pillars and you see where the chips fall.
It's wild to me, and we're getting up against the time here, so this will be kind of the last point, and on radio we'll transition to Chargers, and on podcast we'll wrap up and talk to you guys next week. But it is wild to me, Jamal, how, and I mean, it's not surprising, I guess, but in such a quarterback-driven league, the rest of the nation is just giving the Niners the division because of what they did last year and because of the anomaly that was Brock Purdy, but now who's injured, and we're seeing a Trey Lance who's started one game and Brock Purdy's coming back and may not even start till midway through the season. The anomaly that was Geno Smith, as you alluded to, I don't need to rehash all that. It's a quarterback-driven league, and the only proven quarterback in the division – and probably one of three in the entire conference is Matthew Stafford. Yes, the Rams are remodeling. Yes, he's coming off an injury as well, but he's a proven commodity. It's like the national media takes so much time talking about quarterback this, quarterback this, quarterback this. But for some reason, when it comes to Matthew Stafford for whatever this year, they just forget all that and say, oh, it's the Niners or Seahawks. Doesn't matter who's quarterback. Well, it does matter. It's proven time and time again. It matters who plays quarterback. And if he's fully healthy, which he says he is, the team says he is, Matthew Stafford is far and away the best quarterback in the division. He's arguably the best quarterback in the entire conference. He's the only quarterback in the conference with a Super Bowl ring. And it's why, as you said, it's a tall order for the top two teams in the Seahawks and Niners to truly complete that because of who is going to be under center. And the Rams have the best one. So we shall see. You can give a counter real quick.
And Ryan, I mean, you know, you zoom out on the conference. This is the perfect year to be doing the remodel. I mean, you're talking about five best quarterbacks in football are all in the AFC. Yep. Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Rodgers, Herbert, they're all in the AFC. You're asking Jalen Hurts now to repeat a performance from last year as really the only credible quarterback in this conference. Throw in Lamar, throw in Trevor Lawrence. It's all in the AFC. So this NFC is as wide open as it's ever been.
Exactly. So I'm excited, fired up from this draft. We'll get more into it next week. Quick break on radio, podcast. Thank you all, Ramley, for tuning in. Make sure to check out LAFBNetwork.com for that poll. We'll do our SoCal Party School bracket. So check that out. For Jamal Madden, I'm Ryan Dyer. We'll talk to you guys all next week.
You're listening to the LA Football Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.